Katy Chulkreff is a philosopher. She writes about art. She lives and works in Moscow, where she's associate professor at the Russian State University for Humanities. We met her in Faenza on the occasion of the Contemporary Art Festival, and we asked her to draw a portrait of her motherland, Russia, since the economical and social avalanche of the Medvedev and Putin age, to better understand the Russian contemporary art scene. She points out how the overlap and the misunderstanding between democracy and oligarchy, the translation of the modernization in terms of elite production, have informed art and culture at large in Russia. The post-Soviet accumulation and the Putin age paved the path for the withdrawal of culture from society.
Why democracy and oligarchy are the synonyms are connected together, and why I mention them together? Because in late Soviet times, democracy was connected with the capitalist production, because capitalist production is free economy, free market. So we understood in late Soviet times democracy as free market, because we didn't have free market. We had the distributive economy and planned production. This was, of course, very hard. But of course, nobody had the idea that the free market is not about freedom, that it's about monopoly hierarchy, and it never comes to freedom when you come into the early capitalist situation. And the primitive accumulation that happened was a real shock of the early post-Soviet period, because the privatization of the production happened from above, and there was no free market. So the main production centers were privatized, and people from, I don't know, education, culture, were forced to become entrepreneurs immediately. And this was a real shock, becoming an entrepreneur all of a sudden, when you have no skills, when you have no understanding why you should do business. And all of a sudden, a huge amount of cultural workers, education workers, teachers, I mean, a huge amount of the society became beggars. I mean, lost everything, because the cultural, educational and middle production spheres collapsed. Only commerce and only exchange economy was working. Therefore, democracy for these people, and this was under democracy rhetoric, we should come at last to the democracy, free market, and this was connected with the appropriation and privatization. That's why by the end of the 90s, the Yeltsin period was marked as the primitive accumulation, privatization, and at the same time, democracy. And then the Putin period comes and says that, okay, we stop this bad democracy, we come as the state, and we control all those bad oligarchy. And the society very late realized that this was not rejection of oligarchy mode. This was governmentalization of oligarchy. This was governmentalization of all those accumulation practices and monopolization of them. This became clear after another 10 years. So you have this 20 years wrong democracy, then again criticism of democracy from the point of view of state, and then again you come to classical neoliberal economy, which actually has nothing to do either with social state or with the free market. When Putin came as the populist governor, he had very huge populist electorate, but intelligentsia and art world was completely against him. So he needed some kind of avant-garde modernization rhetoric to surround himself with cultural workers, to appropriate the electorate from cultural field. And he managed to do it because he really tried to draw cinema, literary representatives, contemporary art representatives, towards this modernizing rhetoric. And when the second term of Putin started, this was really successful. And even our department, the philosophic department, I belong to the analytical anthropology department in the Philosophy Institute, and the head of the department, Padaroga, met with Putin, and we got a big grant from Putin, from the image-making office of Kremlin directly. And this was the point to appropriate philosophy, because they had the project of sovereign democracy, not just democracy, but sovereign democracy, which is democracy coming from the government, like the most democratic force belongs to the governing structure. Again, appropriating democracy from oligarchy, bringing it as a sovereign power, and spreading this idea, first of all, in the learned circles, not just people, because people can conform with it easily, but philosopher is somebody who doubts. So this was a very dangerous point, but then the crisis happened, fortunately. The problem today in Russia is that you either have liberal civil society, Protestant to government, or governmentalized intellectuals and elites, and you don't have a strong political force that tries to evade these two possibilities. It's really very narrow. It exists in kind of left intellectual spheres, but it's really very weak and probably has not yet created the strength of its own and dependent on the Western theory to a very considerable extent. And the main vicious thing for all these layers, even progressive ones, even intellectual ones, is that they don't have contact with the unlearned huge amount of the society. You can talk whatever criticism, but in the post-Soviet times there was such collapse of education because education became private. Not all of a sudden, but during the 10 years, they even discussed the school education as being private now, and medical treatment as well, and of course real estate. So these three elements becoming private all of a sudden, you create extreme segregation, and education becomes a luxury. So the progressive thinking is something that costs money. And this is the most painful paradox. And this is the reason for right-wing populism. And this right-wing populism is very efficiently manipulated from the government, because when they want to manipulate it, they transfer it to the xenophobia, instead of directing it to the real economic problems, which come from the neoliberal economy and governmental neoliberal economy. And we had very a dangerous moment in December, starting with the football fan uprising, when it turned out against migrants, Caucasian and Asian migrants. But when you see these people who are protesting, these are the real younger generation who have no social lifts, whose parents already had no social lifts. They are the second generation after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Their integration into progressive thinking is a big problem. So the division is not only division between poor and rich, but the learned middle class and the uneducated. So I would say, as I mentioned, that I really attach, strangely enough, importance to what happened in cinema and documentary development, because this was the only cultural space which took pains and which just wasn't lazy to go to map the province. This is really harsh material, you know. It's enough to go to the metro, you know, it's enough to go to the outskirts of Moscow. And you see that, you know, where is contemporary art, how it functions, where it functions, who is the subject of it, who is the audience of it. You have Moscow Biennale and just international bureaucracy coming, and what is the society that is just taking part in it? It's a big question. So, well, I'm really, really proud of certain films that I've seen, because this was the first time when I saw what happened to the post-Soviet space. What happened to a post-Soviet engineer who believed that science is the most important thing for him. And then he's going to sell tomatoes in the street. And this was the majority of Soviet people. So this was the first time when I saw it in the film, to analyze this social historical problem. And maybe this develops further. So why some things that are discussed even in literature are not present with the war? Chechen war is a taboo in contemporary art. It was a taboo for instance, Balkan artists. It's not a taboo even for Beirut artists. It's a taboo for contemporary artists, because it's a very painful thing. You cannot be critical towards government. You lose all your opportunities, on the one hand. On the other hand, people, they believe that this war was really fair in terms of keeping Chechnya within the frame of Russia. The same with this blitz war with Georgia, you know, which is an extremely painful period. And the same happens in Georgia. I mean, the Abkhaz war, the 90s, they don't exist in art. They just don't exist as the problem in art. And I even wrote about it, why the war had never been discussed, because Russia had been in war for 20 years all the time. There are novels, they are pro-governmental novels, but at least they deal with the war. They try to mark some paradoxical zones of this war. But in art, it means like you are a loser if you deal with these things, and you should be very successful.
Also the intersection between activism and actionism, the artistic reaction and active comment on Russian politics have been changing since the 90s. She retraces this history from that time to the Vaina Group.
We had this political actionism. So I think there is difference between activism and actionism. Because in the 90s we had a very strong trend of actionism, which was extremely politicized. I don't know whether you heard about such actions as the brick on the Red Square or the mounting of the Lenin mausoleum to write against all during the elections. Quite a number of such actions which were very powerful, not only politically, but extremely well done aesthetically. And they became the icons of this Yeltsin period because they were against Yeltsin. They were just against Yeltsin privatizing economy and against terrible ignorance of cultural and artistic space because there was a real collapse. But very paradoxically, when there was a terrible collapse of art and culture institutionally, the actionism, the independently curated exhibitions, independently curated spaces. It was extremely active. And the Moscow Art Magazine appeared in these years, in 1994. Nowadays, the only actionist group that exists is Vaina Group. And they don't have any political claims. They work with this poetics of anarchy and carnival, and their poetics is subversive affirmation, if you know what it means. For instance, there is terrible xenophobic violence, and they reenact this xenophobic violence. They bring Tajik people and hang them in the supermarket. So this is called subversive affirmation. When you affirm something atrocious, something terrible, by reenacting, repeating it, you just mark the critical point. But it's always, you know, double bind, whether you affirm it or whether you criticize it. So I think that in our situation, any Protestant mood is important. But what is really unfortunate that these people don't have any political program and they don't support any political party or situation or don't produce their own political discourse at all. They just reproduce the potentialities of personal anarchy. Even more important is that they got the governmental prize, innovation. Why? Because this governmental institution consists of liberal intelligentsia. They are governmental officials, but they use their governmental position to express their liberal beliefs. And their liberal belief is that it's kind of quite old-fashioned that contemporary art should do something obscene. So this is their belief. It should do something really transgressive or something really not accepted by the majority of very stupid population, you know. So it also has this elitist element in it. And therefore, it's double bind. But some of their actions were really powerful, as the performance when one of the members was wearing the police hat and the clergy dress. It's a good symbol. The church being part and parcel of this police institution of the government. So some of their actions are really interesting. It's very ironic that they are called war, but they never did anything connected with analysis of war, they all the time show their tongue to the government. So they play with the government. They think that contemporary art is to irritate power. This is quite bourgeois, you know, to irritate power, to irritate elite, but it's not going to the areas, I mean, because it's more difficult and it's not so maybe carnivalesque as it may seem. When we had actionism, radical actionism, coming from the left wing and trying to reenact the late 60s activism of Western type, the liberal layers of society, the liberal democracy representatives, hated this actionism. They were calling it a complete disaster from the artistic point of view. It was impossible in the 90s to mention the word Marx. It was impossible for the liberal layers to talk about post-structuralist philosophy because post-structuralist philosophy was considered to be post-Marxist. But now the same society are very positive about this anarchy group because this anarchy group is kind of against authoritarian mode, which is identified by them with the Soviet type of authoritarianism. So again, if we have a real free market, a real individual freedom, liberal freedom, this will be really positive. And this kind of Protestant actionism is very much supported by the liberal opposition to Putin's government, you know, and therefore they don't question the real economic painful areas, and they're not interested with the layers of society which are collapsing economically. They are mainly interested in human rights and the authoritarian penitentiary system as the only vice, because they back up the libertarian ethics. They believe in free market.
At last, we asked Katy Chukra for a comment on the Russian pavilion at the 54th Venice Biennial that is entirely devoted to Andrei Monastirsky and collective actions, and some notes on the Moscow conceptualism and its relations, differences and similarities with the Western conceptualism of the 60s and 70s.
Of course, it related very much as a discourse and historically, and the most conceptualisms represented by Kabakov and Monastirsky, who are the well-known, internationally well-known artists, they definitely had a very strong connection with the Western tradition, but not with the conceptualism of Joseph Kosuth time. Rather, they worked with the ideology language of the Soviet system. And that's the difference, because they worked with the Soviet material culture, because it was already conceptual. It was based on ideology. And from the point of view of poetics and strategy, of course, it has very strong connection with Western conceptualism. Well, Monastirsky is a classical conceptualism belonging to the second generation of Moscow conceptualism. And you may argue that conceptualism doesn't exist anymore because conceptualism was the community, and the community doesn't exist, and the social space for it doesn't exist as type of production. So it's historical and it's only one artist. What is the opinion of appearing some kind of legitimation of history in Venice Biennial? This happening all over. I mean, even the Croatian pavilion is historicizing some kind of part of its underground art history. But I think that, frankly, Monastirsky is a very important artist in all senses, and one of the extreme conceptualists, definitely. But again, you have this appropriation of the most refined art by the private institution, which co-opted with the state to get this pavilion. And there are rumors what this private lady, oligarch's wife, had to do to get such a big governmental state position and to represent the most important historical background of the country. This is the thing that I'm talking about. She's the producer of historicizing contemporary art history, actually. This doesn't make the art of Monastirsky worse. This is making impossible the future development of art, because what he has done in 70s, 80s, 90s is already done, and there are lots and lots of generations which refer to it as artistic material. But again, these institutions which function as foundation, they doesn't allow the movement to be created. And they don't make fashionable the contact with the unprestigious zones. because it's like people have fear, contract illness. They better work in this centrist movement because it's progressive, it's modernizing, going into area which is provincial, which is collapsing. It's like, why go to trashy space, you know, when you are already in the modernist, very well refined spaces, and we just have to extend it a little. Actually, modernization means recession of all social state elements that existed before from unprofitable zones. So if the zone is economically unprofitable, it has to collapse, whatever happens with it. So this is what is modernization. And all profitable zones should be funded and bring economy to its success. So it's about excellence. It's about economic excellence, which is probably the problem in Europe as well. In neoliberal economy to a certain extent, what is technological progress? It's about ethical excellence or economic excellence? It's about competition or it's about spreading, connecting ethics and economics?
RadioPapesse.org.